This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Last June, Lieutenant Aaron Watada made national headlines in the U.S. when he refused to deploy to Iraq. The U.S. Army then charged Watada with one count of missing movement and four counts of conduct unbecoming of an officer and a gentleman in a court-martial to take place next month. Watada had made public his opposition to the U.S. war through the media, and the journalists who reported his opposition have now been subpoenaed to testify against him. We're going to speak with one of those reporters, Sarah Olson, in a few minutes, but first we're going to hear Aaron Watada himself, recorded last year.
Some people would call it an epiphany, but it was sort of a slow transition. I realized that to go to war, it would be best to educate myself in every way possible on why we were going to that particular war and what were just the effects of war in general and the consequences of soldiers going to war and coming back home. So I began reading, and when I reached a particular book, it was James Bamford's book, A Pretext for War. And after I was going through that, I remember I was on a training exercise and I was reading it during my downtime. And after, I don't think I had even finished the whole thing. And after I read certain things on how he was detailing the level of deception that the Bush administration had used to initiate this war and process this war, I was shocked. And there was a point where I just became ashamed of, you know, wearing the uniform. I was thinking, you know, how can we wear this, something that is such a time-honored tradition, knowing that we waged war that was based basically on, I don't know, some people will call it misrepresentation, some people will call it lies. But whatever it was, I think, a betrayal of the trust of the American people and definitely the military and the soldiers.
I am opposed to this war and the misconduct within this administration, and I'm willing to sacrifice my freedom and my good name and be willing to take on the wrath of many people out there because of these beliefs. And that is my personal sacrifice to hopefully end this war a lot sooner and bring these troops home and save some lives, both Iraqi and American.
When you, I guess, you know, are looking your children in your eye in the future, or you're, you know, at the end of your life or looking on your deathbed, you want to look back on your life and think that, well, you know, while there was a lot of, you know, missteps and things like that, and I haven't lived the perfect life, that at a very important part in my life, when I had the opportunity to make the right decision, that I did so, knowing that there were, you know, negative consequences.
That was Lieutenant Aaron Watada in a radio documentary co-produced by Sarah Olson for the National Radio Project's Making Contact. Lieutenant Watada continues to report for duty at Fort Lewis in the state of Washington while awaiting a February court-martial on one charge of missing movement and four charges of conduct unbecoming to an officer. If convicted on all charges, Lieutenant Watada could spend up to 6 years in prison. Sarah Olson is an independent journalist and radio producer who has covered Iraq war veterans since 2003. She interviewed Lieutenant Watada in May regarding his decision to refuse to deploy to Iraq. The U.S. Army has subpoenaed her to testify against Watada next month. Sarah has spoken out publicly against the Army's subpoena, which she says will chill both independent journalism and public discussion of critical political issues. And Sarah joins me this morning from Oakland, California. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
How did Aaron Watada come to oppose the war in Iraq? What is his story?
Well, you know, I think the clip that you played earlier, you know, kind of really summed it up well. In the interview he did with me, you know, he talked about being a patriot, you know, joining the Army in 2003 because he loved his country, because he wanted to give something back. And he And so with that in mind, you know, he became an officer, and as he said, you know, when he learned he would deploy to Iraq, he basically decided he would learn everything he could about the war in advance of his deployment. And so as he began reading, all sorts of material, it's interesting to hear his kind of evolution. And, I don't think he doesn't often point to, you know, one thing or another that, you know, happened that kind of instantly made him believe that the Iraq War was illegal. He kind of says it's, you know, a slow or evolutionary process. A couple things that, you know, he talked to me about, driving it home, I think maybe more emotionally rather than intellectually. You know, he talked about hearing a call-in radio show, actually, and how somebody had called in, I think, you know, very emotional and near tears, knowing that a relative was redeploying to Iraq, and how this person had, you know, was really thought that the war was illegal, the person calling in, and it was just, you know, beside himself with, grief over the deployment of the relative. He also talks about, you know, some of the media clips where they show the funerals of the men and women who have died in Iraq. And he talks about a scene one where, you know, a kid came out of his father's funeral and was just, you know, just devastated emotionally. So, you know, he talks about these kinds of things. And after, you know, maybe these are kind of the emotional developments, but then, you know, as he said in the clip that you played, he also, you know, was reading, and, you know, some of the kind of facts around the war are now quite well documented in terms of, you know, there being very little in terms of evidence to back up some of the claims that the Bush administration made around the run-up to the Iraq War. And, you know, I think that that's, a matter of record at this point. It's, it would be very difficult to contest it. And, so these are the things that, you know, he points to in terms of his development into a more anti-war stance.
It was June when Lieutenant Watada made national headlines in the U.S. for his refusal. Now, you interviewed him in the month prior to that. Had he already made his decision when you talked to him?
Oh, yes. He had actually told his commanding officers months in advance of that he didn't want to go, that he didn't want to deploy to Iraq. He had kind of, you know, over the New Year's, kind of around this time last year, he had kind of told his parents and entered into kind of the whole conversation there where, you know, both of them, I think, maybe had a little bit of concern for his well-being, as is understandable. And, his mom talks about having, you know, tried to talk him out of it. And his dad talks about, you know, being concerned about his career. But, he had, you know, this is kind of a slow process, kind of, you know, building up and kind of making doing kind of the work, both within his own family and then telling his commanding officers. They knew in advance of all this as well. I don't know, you know, what all he told them, you know, in the month of June when he held the press conference. They certainly knew in advance that he was having it. He did it according to certain stipulations of the Fort Lewis command. He wasn't to do it during, you know, work hours, and he wasn't to do it in uniform, and he didn't do either of those things. So, you know, that's also a point of record.
Now, why have you been subpoenaed?
Well, it's interesting. Lieutenant Watada was charged with, in his court-martial today, he's facing five charges. One is, missing movement. Basically, he didn't go to Iraq. The other four are conduct unbecoming an officer and a gentleman. And each of the four charges of conduct unbecoming is based solely on statements Lieutenant Watada made, either in public events like the Veterans for Peace Convention in August, or to individual journalists like myself. So when I did this interview, I recorded the audio, like the clips that you just heard. And then I also, I transcribed that, and I published on June 7th, you know, a pretty lengthy kind of back and forth interview. It was really just a transcript of an interview, and of the interview I did with him. The Army looked at that, and they kind of pieced together certain statements he made in that. And that is one of his conduct unbecoming charges. That is what he... that, you know, so that's one of the four conduct charges against him. In order to verify those charges that they have pulled from, you know, the quotes that they've pulled from the print article, they need to, if something is in print, it's, you know, kind of legally it's considered hearsay until someone verifies that it's accurate. So basically, my contention is that they should take the audio that I have had, you know, that is publicly available. There's no reason to involve journalists in this prosecution. And, you know, there's some very serious kind of press freedom issues that are involved. And, you know, they're very concerning to me.
Well, let's talk about that, because typically when journalists are subpoenaed to confirm the truth and accuracy of their reporting, they agree to that limited request. Why are you opposed to doing that?
Right. It's a good question. It's... essentially, as you say, you know, every journalist wants to stand by their reporting, and I do. Everything I reported was accurate, and I'm not contesting that, and neither is the defense, neither is Lieutenant Watada or any or his lawyers. However, what the Army is asking me to do is to basically, you know, my job is to, you know, report the news. It's not my job to participate in the prosecution of political speech. And when you ask journalists, you know, when speech itself is the crime at question, when you ask journalists to, you know, kind of enter into some kind of collusion with the government to prosecute these crimes based on speech, You run the risk of turning the journalists into, you know, kind of the investigative arm or the eyes and ears of the government. And that is a position that is absolutely, you know, hostile to the idea of a free and independent press.
What do you think the implications are for a free and independent press and for free speech that flow from their move to compel you to testify against your source?
Well, I mean, I think they're really chilling and fairly dire. Again, this is a unique case in the sense that, you know, the military is pretty much the only place that I know of in the United States where this kind of trial could be happening, and I think that's very significant. Typically, people are not prosecuted, you know, in any civilian court, you wouldn't be prosecuted for speech-related crimes. That said, I think that, you know, kind of, asking a journalist to participate in the to really like build the prosecution of speech-related crimes again is just stark. I think what happens then is that you get a sense, certainly in the military and potentially throughout civilian society as well, that you know, the government is capable of prosecuting speech-related crimes, and you will find people less willing to speak out, less willing to talk about dissenting views, less willing to talk about unpopular opinions, less willing to do, you know, the kind of like whistleblowing stuff that Dan Ellsberg did back during the Vietnam War. And I think that the idea then is that, you know, the press would kind of simply be reduced to kind of like transcribing government press releases and, you know, and I mean, in a very kind of weird Orwellian way. And, you know, that may be a little bit, you know, I think that's kind of like a worst case scenario. I'm not saying that's exactly what would happen tomorrow, but I think it's a kind of, you know, it's a slippery slope. It, I think, requires vigilance. And, you know, I think the other thing that in the American press, you know, after the Iraq War started, we saw major media outlets kind of issuing public apologies, saying, you know, we're really sorry. We didn't really report well on the Iraq War, on the buildup to it. We didn't ask the critical questions that the media are expected to ask. And as a result, you know, we're now in this war. And, you know, kind of the media outlets like the New York Times kind of taking responsibility for this. And so I think we see what happens when the press doesn't function properly, when the press doesn't kind of represent all sides and all views well. And, you know, I think that this subpoena is taking us down that road again. One of many things, actually, right now that is taking us down that road. And, you know, I think that is what, to me, is so concerning and, you know, about the Army subpoenas.
Dar Jamal, who's also done extensive independent reporting on and from Iraq, he's also on the subpoena list for Ouattara's court-martial. How can people work to support the both of you, your journalistic freedom?
Well, I think, you know, the primary thing is to make sure that people know about it and, you know, really register their concern, you know, about the speech-related issues involved. I mean, you know, I see this as really an issue of dissent. I think that's the other thing that is real important. When you start prosecuting people for dissent, when the media no longer becomes a venue for dissent, then, you know, what happens to the next soldier that, you know, has questions about the Iraq War and the one after that? And so, you know, I think that the first thing is for people to pay attention to their media, pay attention to the types of, you know, reporting that happens, and making sure that, you know, whatever the issue, people respond to it critically, they look at it, you know, from, again, all aspects, and kind of engage in debate and critical debate around the issue. After that, I think that after that, you can actually go to our website to just kind of, you know, follow the case. The website is freepresswg.org.
And we also have a link from our website to that site, so we can direct people there. Thanks very much, Sarah, for talking to us this morning.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Sarah Olson. She's an independent reporter based in Oakland, California. You can find links to her commentary and information about this issue at the website for the Free Press Working Group, and she gave the link there, or you can also get there through our site, which is coopradio.org/redeye. You can find links there to more information about Lieutenant Ouattara and to a day of support, which is being planned to coincide with the beginning of his trial on February 5th.